KALW.
We also prayed against this virus, that it doesn't come by us, it doesn't touch us.
A woman lives through the quarantine on a refurbished school bus.
I feel like I'm on my, like Noah's Ark. I'm in safety now. I'm in control of my environment. It's my sanctuary.
Unhoused and dealing with the coronavirus. Then an artist tells the story of LGBTQ plus history in San Francisco through acting.
I went through a lot to become myself as a queer person, but I don't know, Sylvester's story is so compelling to me.
And we'll hear a reading from a San Francisco poet whose debut poetry collection has just been published.
It's about survival, resiliency, and ultimately the triumph over trauma and the alchemy of healing.
That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Adjusting to life during COVID-19 has been challenging for everyone. Having to stay home as much as possible and bringing a mask and hand sanitizer in your back pocket wherever you go. The rules surrounding COVID-19 are written for people who have stable and reliable housing, the ones who can actually shelter in place. For the thousands of people who are living in homeless shelters, tents, and in their cars across the Bay Area, social distancing is extremely difficult. Reporter Tessa Paoli has been recording with Constance Johnson and her kids David and Miracle for the past 2 years. The family lives on a converted school bus in Richmond. Constance recorded daily audio diaries to chronicle what it was like to ride out the pandemic with a bus for a home.
I seen these buses on YouTube, and I was like, ooh, I could do this. Ooh, I could go here. I was like, oh, you know, my mind was just, this was like it. A bus? I can live on a bus. This is the bedroom. This is my room. This is the closet. This right here is the bars that came off the bus originally and made it into a curtain that both of them can have their privacy when they're studying or sleeping.
Those curtains mean David and Miracle have their own bedroom and privacy for the first time in years. Miracle's 10 and David's 12. The family moved in last December, 2 months before the pandemic hit. Before the bus, they spent 3 years bouncing between different homeless shelters and their car.
Where are we going to go today? How are we going to live today? That's traumatizing to a child. It's traumatizing to an adult. Because I lived in my car. I would, you know, park at Walmart in Vallejo. And, you know.
Park at a rest stop.
Yeah, I would park at rest stops and everything. And it got more and more nerve-wracking. I wanted to take a shower to clean myself, clean my children. We would go to the gas station. People looked at us strangely. And I would drive. I mean, people look at it and they're like, wow, this looked like an apartment. This bus is beautiful.
Before COVID-19, the family spent Sundays at church. They went to pray, help pass out food, and pick up donated groceries. The pastor blessed the bus before they moved in.
Get what you want. What happened? Everybody, nobody showed up to church?
No. Did you hear the news concerning the gathering?
The family went to see their pastor on March 14th, 2 days before the Bay Area shelter-in-place order. It was the last time they saw him.
Anything you guys want, you can get it out of the truck. Hey, how you doing?
Since that outing, the family has quarantined in their 40-foot bus.
I compare this bus with a beautiful woman or a handsome man, and they so good looking, so good looking, but just don't ask them to do nothing. The bus don't start. It don't start. I'm getting it fixed as I go.
After moving out of the homeless shelter in December, the family's still adjusting to life on the bus, figuring out where to dump their compostable toilet and how to get hot running water. Tasks that were much easier before the virus. the last thing the family needed was a global pandemic.
Wow, it sure is making a whole lot of different sounds, this recorder.
As soon as the shelter-in-place order comes down, Constance starts recording her family's experience on the bus.
Today, we woke up. It is a beautiful day. You know, so it's like almost 7 o'clock. We still in the bed. We woke up at 6:50 or something like that. Anyway, it was raining a little because I thought about the roof, the ceiling, and God blessed me to pray. And I prayed that it stopped raining, and it did. And we also prayed against this virus, that it doesn't come by us. It doesn't touch us. And we believe in God for that.
In the first week of COVID-19, Constance doesn't really believe in the virus yet. It's still such an unknown.
But other people believing in it around me, to me, it's just so pitiful. I just gotta say it. It's just so pitiful. What happened to chicken soup? You know, what happened to knowing how to take care of ourselves? I mean, I'm telling you, I was really getting kind of sick when my friend was saying, oh, it's more than what we thought. Oh, it's like this. Because she got a television. Oh, she got a house. Oh, be scared, be scared. Okay, well, I don't want to talk to you anymore. I don't want to be scared.
Oh, my corona. My corona.
Now, I can tell you what's affecting me. What's affecting me is my children are out of school and I can't get a job that I planned on getting so I can get out of this situation. I could be doing something right now. I am trying to work by doing the barter system, and some people just want cash.
Before the pandemic, Constance was looking for a job as an in-home care provider for elderly people. But since shelter in place, this is yet another thing that she's had to put on hold.
I can't get a job right now because people are not working. People are being told to be shut in. And what are we going to do when we run out of the money? It's just so much. It's just so much that it's, it's happening or not happening because of the corona. But I found out that security guards are in demand, but you can't be a security guard if your children have nobody to take care of them during that period of time. I am looking for something to do online. I'm not that great at computer correspondence, I don't think, but I think that I could learn to be.
Yeah, it's done. Okay, I need those little hand things. It tastes good. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
Okay. You want me to cut it?
No.
I think I better cut it.
It is the 22nd. Got some groceries. I had to be very prudent. And so only got $50, $51 worth of groceries. And I'm going to try to make it stretch to the end of the month. They didn't have any garlic at the store. Wow. But that's okay. I have to go to another store. I think I have enough money in the bank to get some garlic.
Before COVID-19, Constance relied on weekly runs to the store to buy big jugs of water for showers and washing dishes. But since the pandemic hit, those gallons are hard to come by. Like toilet paper, there was a rush on water.
That stresses me out more than the virus.
I'm trying to get out of this situation. My water do not work. I have to lug water. I have to buy water. But we ran out of water when I, you know, went to the store. They ran those little machines that you get, those 5-gallon bottles of water. We ran out. Praise God, always make a way out of no way. She gave me a key to the garden, so now I can get my water from the garden because they run out.
In the first week of shelter in place, Constance moves the bus in front of a community garden in Richmond. She calls it the Peace Garden. In exchange for sweeping and watering the plants, the owner tells Constance she can use the hose to refill her water tank. After Constance lugs the water from the garden, she boils it for hot showers.
And we just put the soap in your hair. And I had to boil some water. It would be easier if our shower worked, but I have this funnel. Or what is it called? What is this called? For watering plants. People gotta stay clean.
In week 3 of Shelter in Place, Constance learns that her pastor, the one that blessed her bus, has died.
When I remember my pastor in a good way, he'll be in church and he'll crack a joke.
She doesn't know how he died, but she assumes COVID-19 had something to do with it. And because churches are closed, she couldn't say goodbye.
And it shook me when my pastor passed away. It shook my faith. I know where my pastor's soul went to, his spirit, his soul, but where did his body go? Where did they take him? Where do they take people that die during this time?
As California moves into the second month of quarantine, Constance is mourning the loss of her pastor and missing church. But she's feeling grateful that she got the bus to call home just before the shelter-in-place order.
I chose life when I chose to live on a bus. When people right now today say I need to get off this bus and get an apartment, I can get Section 8. That's what someone else created. This is what I created. When I get back on my bus, I feel like I'm on my, like Noah's Ark, I'm in safety now. I'm in control of my environment pretty much when I get back to my bus. It's my sanctuary. And I do a lot of stuff here at the garden because I feel like I'm appreciative of the lady that lets me park here without a hassle.
The family hasn't had to move their bus every 2 days during the shelter in place like they did before the pandemic. They've been able to call the garden spot home.
Hey, everybody. I am here in the garden, in the Peace Garden. And this is where we had Miracle's birthday party. It didn't have the sounds of children playing with each other because of social distancing.
In the first week of June, things start to open back up in Richmond, and Constance hears a knock on her door.
This morning, I woke up to someone on the side of my bus talking about me. Anyway, I said, okay, they sound friendly. Let me open up the door. And the police that came to the door when I opened it up, and they had words for me. I wanted to cry, like a sadness, you know, because the officer was saying that I had to leave. And this area that I live in, it was so safe. I felt so safe here. It was like no gunshots whizzing by. It was, you know, I didn't have to worry about my son and daughter playing outside.
The officers tell Constance she has to leave because she's been parked at the garden for more than 72 hours. A neighbor reported that she was dumping her trash on the street.
And I was not dumping. And I mean, people can say anything about you and it's okay, I guess. It feels very painful that a place that I grew up in Richmond, that now I'm forced to leave. But the thing about it is, leave for where? Where do I go? Where can I find peace again?
That was an excerpt from a collection of audio diaries from Constance Johnson. That piece was produced by reporter Tessa Paoli. You can listen to the full story online at kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. This weekend marks San Francisco's 50th Pride. Although in-person festivities are canceled, people are celebrating online, like Seth Eisen. He's founder of the San Francisco-based theater company, iZen. His show, Out of Sight, is a theater project where audiences follow actors around the streets of San Francisco, and they watch them perform at places that are part of LGBTQ plus history. Now, audiences will get their next history lesson virtually in his show, Out of Sight, SOMA. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Seth Eisen about how he blends the arts and history.
What inspired you to go into theater?
Oh, that's a big question.
Is it?
I kind of fell into theater, you know, in this really funny way. I actually started as a visual artist, and then I actually took an African dance class when I was, like, in college, and I don't know, just something clicked, and I was like, oh, wow, I love moving. And I had this amazing teacher, and she was super encouraging to me, and it led me to going to school for dance and theater. But it wasn't until 2007 where I had, you know, really my first solo show and started to really go deep into, oh, I get it now. My thing is research about queer history and really finding voices that a lot of people don't know about and bringing those stories to theatrical space.
Was there someone in queer history whose story really resonated with you or inspired you and you felt like their story hasn't been told enough?
Yeah, there's lots. I mean, enough so that I feel like all of my work is dedicated to that. But the first opportunity was the story of Sylvester. And when I discovered Sylvester, I didn't really know about history, you know, in San Francisco with the Cockettes and, you know, being an out gay black man in the 60s and 70s. I don't know. I just was super inspired by reading a book about him, Fabulous Sylvester, and just getting a deeper understanding of what he had to go through in order to show him his true self. I went through a lot to become myself as a queer person, but I don't know, Sylvester's story is so compelling to me.
You know, there's so much beauty in LGBTQ plus culture, or just the influences that we see from queer culture today. Have you found that too, as far as in your research too?
Oh, it's everywhere, but I think people just don't. I mean, of course, queer people know, but like what I love is, especially with the shows that we do now, because they feature many different people, I love turning people on to histories they don't know about. Like our current show, I think it's about South of Market, but it has a lot of histories about like the labor movement and the anti-racist practices of the 1930s labor movement and all the queer people that existed in the unions at that time who were fighting for queer rights, but they were also fighting to have equality, that's always really exciting to me, to learn from those stories. So there's tons and tons of them. And I think also, to me, what's challenging about this work is that some of these stories are, you know, are just really hard to find, especially the stories of Black and brown people. Like, they were talking about all these different dancers and different people, and I was like, who's, like, you know, who was the Black dancer? Who was the queer Black dancer of that moment? You know, like, we learned about Gladys Bentley. She was this famous singer from Harlem who came to the West Coast and was one of the headliners, but, you know, and she was, like, an out lesbian or bisexual, and, but who's the Black dancer who was, like, you know, ahead of his time in this moment? And we discovered, like, after a lot of research, because the history is not written anywhere, this dancer, Zach Thompson, that one historian turned me on to. And he performed at all these different clubs and was a mentor to many and had his own little dance school over there in North Beach. And he then got tired of the racism in San Francisco and then eventually moved to Paris and performed with Josephine Baker and had this whole other life in Europe. And then he came back to San Francisco and actually died of AIDS. I heard that there were like 2,000 people at his funeral, but where is his history?
Out of sight, SOMA, and I know you've done this at different places around San Francisco. You know, they say the world is a stage, and you literally went out into the world, went out into the streets, and made it your stage. I love this idea. Where did you come up with this idea to do this? I love it.
Well, it was kind of a dream project. Having had the opportunity to go to different festivals in other states and other countries, you know, you see all kinds of people on the street watching street performance, and I'm like, that's where the people's at. But really, the inspiration came from reading this study that got done during the Obama administration when the National Park Service was funded to do these historic context statements of different cities like Chicago, San Francisco, New York, I think Philly. And they were looking to see how different minorities in those cities helped to build the city, the culture of those cities. And so they did a study about how queer people helped to build San Francisco. And I looked through this document and I was like, this is what I want to spend the next 10 years working on.
That was director Seth Eisen speaking with KELW's Janae Darden. His virtual show, Out of Sight, SOMA, runs this weekend. Go to KELW.org for all the information. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Bay Area authors have had to cancel their launch parties and book tours because of the coronavirus, so we're bringing them to you in this series we're calling New Arrivals. Today we hear a reading from San Francisco author Thea Matthews. Here's Thea.
I live right now in San Francisco, California. I am moving to New York City, though, soon. My debut poetry collection, Unearth the Flowers, it's about survival, resiliency, and ultimately the triumph over trauma and the alchemy of healing. Here's one of the excerpts of my poems. I cry, growl, slice arteries with teeth. I wrestle with the treachery of men until I twirl prayers into beads of nectar, break the hex of hatred, ground the betrayal into fertile land. I grow from the whispers of shh, don't tell nobody, fingers over lips. Today my mouth like legs rests wide, open. Believe me, he knew someone would. Thank you.
That was Thea Matthews reading from her book of poetry, Unearth the Flowers. Find more information about that book and other recent releases by Bay Area authors at klw.org/newarrivals. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.